Unearthing the depths of contemporary cassettes and vinyl undergrounds, ranging from DIY bedroom pop and garage rock all the way to harsh noise and, of course, drone. Pop Drone, every Wednesday at 10 to 11:30 a.m. at CITR 101.9 FM.
My advice to young girls would be, go home after school.
come and sing a song. Something that belongs here. Come and crown me soul. Mystery is born here. Alive, 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 alive. Alive, 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 alive. Oh, alive. Come and rest your bones. You look awful tired, fall soft upon the fire. Mystery is born. Alive, 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 alive. Alive, 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 alive. Oh, alive. Good day is nothing that we thought. Finding out brings nothing that we thought. Oh, please don't stand a mood apart. You don't need to break your heart. One day we'll teach us why. You will never know.
Good morning. This is Valerio
then
from
the utter misery that is College Radio, where they apparently just let any bewildered freshman wander into
BBC
the booth and try to run a
and
radio
have
station.
The pleasure today to introduce here a very
campus
nice
outreach is looking
host.
For.
Hang on. He's here.
College Radio can pretty much
from,
be summed up in five words.
CITR. From Vancouver, we have here Katie. She was in Ecuador a few time ago, and today I would like to interview her about this wild experience in Amazonia.
Yes. Hi, I'm really happy to be here. Hi, yes, I'm really happy to be here. How does that sound? Do I sound okay?
Yes.
Oh, great, okay.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I was in the Amazon 6 months ago, and it was really incredible and amazing. And I'm looking forward to talking a bit about it and about the social issues also that are going on in the Amazon, protecting the wild.
Wow.
Yeah.
So which year was?
I was there in 2013 from August until New Year's.
And which is the best... memory that you have about this wild place, like from Amazonia?
Oh my goodness.
Like if you want to find
best
something.
Best memory. Oh, there were so many good memories. One really intense memory. Well, probably my best memory is swimming in this beautiful lagoon. Every night we would take a boat out to this beautiful lagoon and swim there at sunset, and the sun was coming down and the birds were just singing this like enormous beautiful symphony in the trees and like the palm trees, and I don't know, just absolutely gorgeous, and bats flying around, and
wow,
yeah, and just like boating in the night through all of that, and with like monkeys and vines, and oh my god, just unbelievable.
Yes. So this was Amazonia. Just localize the place. So I think with Ecuador, if I understand good.
Yes, Ecuador. So I went to one area called Cuyabeno, which is the area I was just talking about, and then I also biked out to an indigenous community in Santo Domingo, where the Sachala community lives, and I got to stay with them for a while as well.
Right. So this experience, Kate, was like just vacation, or you were there for study or volunteer?
I was in Quito, Mexico. I've got Quito, Ecuador. Oh my god! I was in Quito, Ecuador, and I've got a song here from Quito that I'll play at some point during the show for an exchange trip. So I was living and working there, and then Ecuador is an extremely small country that is very, very diverse in terms of the types of landscapes that are there. So Quito is actually in the Andes, and it's sort of in the northern, like, center of the country. So, like, the Andes cut Ecuador in half, north to south. And then on the right, you have the Amazon rainforest. And then on the left, you have some pockets of rainforest, but you also have tropical beaches, and all in between there's all sorts of different landscapes in between. There's like cloud forests, which are like rainforests except for high up. The Quito is like, I think, like the third highest city in terms of altitude in the world. So you actually, there are planes that fly below where Quito is. And so there are areas that are not rainforest but cloud forest, because it's actually in the clouds, but it's humid. Like, I don't know, yeah. all these different crazy landscapes.
Yeah, so which is the, just to understand, I don't know, which is the difference between a rainforest and cloud forest?
Well, it's, you know, I'm by no means an expert on this stuff, but mostly it's altitude, you know, like a cloud forest is still a very humid area with lush vegetation, but yes, a cloud forest is so high up that the precipitation is actually cloud as opposed to rain, whereas a rainforest is lower down in the basin. And that also means that the rainforests I went to were a lot warmer and a bit more humid. I don't know.
Yes. Yeah, because we know rainforest, of course, because Vancouver and BC is a rainforest area. But this is for me the first time that I know the cloudy forest.
It's very interesting. It's a really cool climate. I'll find some information on it and talk a little bit more about it.
Oh, that's later. A good idea.
Yeah.
So you said that you have you bring some music from Ecuador, right?
I did.
Wow.
So maybe I can play. This is a traditional song called El Chulia Quiteño. And they play it over the month of December. There are these huge street festivals, and everybody drinks cane liquor and sings this song in the street. There are these enormous parties. And so
it's interesting.
Here, we will listen to it now.
Yes.
I get really sentimental. Okay, with it. This one?
Yes.
Okay. We'll be right back.
el dueño de este precioso patrimonio nacional. Chuyaquiteño, tú constituyes también la gloria de este Quito colonial.
Nice music, very nice.
Yeah, it's a really funny song. Like the in Spanish, the lyrics are, it's this guy just being like, I'm a Quiteño guy, and I'm so happy to be from Quito, and like the women in Quito are the most beautiful women in the world, and I don't know, it's a very sweet song.
Yeah, it is. So, Kate, I just would like to talk about the conservation. In the forest, like how is the situation regarding like conservation area and, you know, the protected area? Like, do you find that is important there, like the institution and the organization, the local organization, they care about that, or it's like wild and like everybody can do everything?
Well, it's really interesting because Ecuador is a country that has historically faced a lot of poverty issues. And right now they have a president, Rafael Correa, who I forget when he was elected. He was elected a couple of years ago, and he's very, very popular. People really love him, and Ecuador has been politically quite unstable over the years. Like they've switched presidents pretty frequently, and there's also some history of corruption there, and there's definitely like a climate politically where people don't necessarily trust politicians not to embezzle money, that kind of thing. Rafael Correa really has the confidence of the people, and he's a really, really interesting fellow. Of course, there are people that don't like him so much, but that's another story. He's quite socialist, and he has Ecuador's economy really relies on the United States and on foreign investment to the extent where they actually use the U.S. dollar. That being said, Rafael Correa has done many things to assert political autonomy from the United States. And one example, for example, is when Edward Snowden was looking for political, like refugee status.
Yes.
within different countries, Rafael Correa was like very seriously and publicly considered accepting Edward Snowden as a refugee. So stuff like that. Like he's really into asserting independence, and that includes with oil companies. He's been pretty clear that Ecuador needs to be taking the lead in terms of making sure that, like, business decisions make sense for Ecuador and that oil companies aren't just exploiting the country. And one thing that's really interesting, like, especially from the vantage point of a Canadian, is that he wants to nationalize the oil. Or when people are talking about natural resources in Ecuador, it's seen as a public resource. It's seen as, like, and it's kind of taken for granted that that money will then be public to a certain extent. And oil companies have not taken too kindly to that to a certain extent. So anyway, that's a bunch of background information. Yasuni is a small ecological reserve within Ecuador, within the Amazon rainforest, and it's arguably the most biodiverse area on the planet. It's beautiful.
Wow.
It's a really priceless, like, piece of the world. And there's oil reserves in Yasuni. So a few years ago, Rafael Correa basically took to the world stage and said, this is our economic situation. We need money. We're a developing country. We have these oil reserves. They're in this area that it's important for the whole world that we conserve. So we need to raise the equivalent amount of money in order to not develop this oil. So, like, we need other countries that are richer to donate, so that we don't have to destroy this area in order to develop our country.
Yeah.
And in exchange for that, we won't touch it. And that was unsuccessful, that sort of bid. So a couple of years after that, he's now officially decided to go ahead and allow certain people permits to develop the oil there. So that has been just, like, this enormous controversy within Ecuador. And Rafael Correa takes a lot of flack for it. There are a lot of foreign environmentalists there. Like, so it includes them. There are lots of petitions going around and whatnot. But I think it's a really international responsibility. I think that when you're looking at development within Ecuador, people tend to put the blame on Rafael Correa or on the Ecuadorian government. They're the ones that certainly hear the most about it, but it really is an international issue, especially because so many mining companies and so many oil companies are based in Canada. And it's something that we don't really hear about a lot here in Canada, is the extent to which our foreign investment and our foreign business is affecting these developing countries.
Yes. So you think the Ecuador government is protecting, is for oil or is for Amazonia? You think Amazonia is enough protected there or not?
Well, no. That's what I'm saying is, obviously, at this point, the Ecuadorian government is going ahead with certain development plans that are absolutely putting some of the most ecologically diverse areas in the world in jeopardy. And that is a fact, and it's very sad. At the same time, can you blame the Ecuadorian government for not protecting that area? I don't think so. Only because, like, I believe, and I know that there are people that would disagree with me. Hello? I believe, and I know that there are people that would disagree with me, that that Rafael Correa and that the current government is moving forward in poverty issues. There are very real social issues within Ecuador that need to be addressed. And to a certain extent, in the case of Ecuador, it would be irresponsible of them not to either develop or consider alternatives. And for years they have been reaching out to the rest of the world and trying to develop those alternatives. So it's pretty sad. I mean, and just like in Canada, Canada is a different situation though, because Canada is economically developed to the extent where I don't think that we necessarily need to develop our natural resources with the same sort of, I don't know, short-sighted, like, necessity that Ecuador, like, that Ecuador needs for funding right now. That being said, one similarity is that in all of this, indigenous groups in Ecuador are also kind of being thrown under the bus in terms of their traditional land, and that is extremely sad. And also something I don't know a whole lot about. One thing that I think had, one thing that was really interesting in my time there was looking at different indigenous groups and the kinds of entrepreneurial endeavors that they're taking in order to make use of the wildlife in order to make money without without exploiting natural resources. So, I mean, for example, Yasuni is the most ecologically diverse area in the world. Like, you'd think that the tourist, the possibilities for a tourism industry related to that, you'd think would be really great. But then, obviously, the tourism industry does affect the wildlife in these, like, really profound ways. Like, motorboats, boating groups of tourists and hostels being set up in, like,
yes,
the midst of the rainforest.
That's very important because I'm a Greenpeace volunteer and activist for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a big campaign regarding Amazonia and forest,
mm-hmm.
specific for Amazonia. In Brazil, I know that every day for agriculture, for building, for business, is destroyed like 7 soccer fields per day.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just to understand like the idea how many trees and Amazonia we lose every day.
Mm-hmm.
This is very terrible, and governments leave this happen in Brazil. Mm-hmm. That's why I ask you in Ecuador, because, Amazonia is, I think, still now is the most important forest in the world.
Yeah.
And for life, for every living things, is, you know.
Absolutely. So I guess, like, from my role as a Canadian, though, I just, like, I think it's really easy, and the conversation often shifts to being very critical of the governments that are in charge of those areas, particularly because, like, you know, like, there are a lot of issues with, like, corruption and a lot of stuff like that as well, like social issues within Latin America. As a North American, though, when it comes to these natural resources, it's really important to look at it as this social issue as well, where these people are being forced to develop their resources in a way that is not logical, because they are desperate for money, you know? And as a developed nation, you know, within Canada, we need, like, I just like to think about, like, what is my role in all of this as a Canadian citizen? And a lot of these companies that are benefiting financially from this are Canadian-based. So it's like, what can we do about that, you know?
Yes. Yeah, it's not easy at all, actually. Because it's like...
Okay. Sorry about that.
It's like, you know, it's very important both, like, to protect the Amazonia and to, you know, to understand the situation of the local economy and the developing of the country. So it's not easy. We can take a few minutes of break and listen to the next music.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Bueno, bueno.
Bueno.
Sondo Gallo Negro.
Yeah, Sonido Gallo Negro.
Yes.
And Gallo Negro is Spanish for black cock. And they are a cumbia band from Mexico. They're one of my favorites.
Awesome.
I really like them. I was turned on to them in Ecuador, but.
Okay, 101.9 CITR Radio from UBC Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And here today is with us Kate, that she's telling us her Hispanic experience in Ecuador, in wild area like Amazonia.
Mm-hmm.
So now we talked about even the problem of business, oil, but which kind of wildlife you met, like which kind of animal and plants?
Oh, I had a really awesome encounter with an araña escorpión, which is that literally translates to scorpion spider, but I guess in English the name scorpion spider is taken by another much more poisonous spider. This spider is totally a-okay for humans to be around, and they're a tree spider, and they're huge. They're like bigger than your outstretched hand. They're just like these like really enormous spiders, and they look like little aliens. They're like kind of like daddy long. Like, I don't know. They're just like really gangly. Like, there's practically nothing to them. They're like little skeletons, and they hang out on the sides of trees and eat butterflies and moths. So I met one araña escorpión and watched him eat a moth, and that was pretty trippy. And then I was with a guide who passed around the spider, and he crawled around on my face, which was very cool. Wow. And then we met a tarantula as well, but they're very dangerous. There was actually tarantulas all over the place. Like, they'll be like in the corner of your room or like on your ceiling or whatever, and you just kind of have to be cool about it because they're actually quite dangerous, but they're more scared of you than you. So you just kind of have to not freak out about the fact that they're there. There were some frogs in the bedroom, like giant frogs, and those were pretty neat. Monkeys, there were lots of monkeys around. I saw a few crocodiles.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Like, there were just so many. Apparently there were anacondas in the area, but I didn't see one. And there were also pink dolphins, pink river dolphins. I'm going to look up their mating habits right now, because pink river dolphins, that's the thing that is really interesting about them.
Oh, did you snorkel there?
I did go snorkeling. I did not see the pink river dolphins there. The Amazon river dolphin. Okay. All I did as far as snorkeling, that was in a place called Isla de la Plata, which is colloquially known as the poor man's Galapagos. It only costs like $20 to take a boat out there. And it is covered in blue-footed boobies and giant turtles. And that's it. And when you snorkel, there's like all sorts of, you know, like Dory, the fish from Finding Nemo, like kind of fishes like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing. So I assume it's a good area to scuba diving for scuba.
Yes. Yeah. There's lots of really amazing scuba opportunities.
So what I understood is you definitely would suggest people to go to visit Ecuador, and
absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, like to visit, but even to do something like some experience, like local experience, maybe volunteer or, I don't know, studying or explore the yes. wild area.
I would absolutely encourage that. And moreover, I would encourage people when they are looking at Amazon trips to be really conscious of things like ecotourism and where you can put money, like, because tourism is an enormous industry. So like making sure that you're putting your tourism dollars somewhere where they're actually going to make a difference, because there are many groups that use the tourism industry as a way to resist oil and gas development. And then on the other side of things, there are many organizations that are totally not conscious of their ecological footprint and will just like run motorboats all day down the Amazon rainforest rivers without a care in the world as to how that is affecting the local wildlife and whether that's sustainable. I did a bike trip down, like, to visit the Satchela community, and they just kind of showed us a lot about, like, traditional ways of life and, like, traditional fishing and all this stuff, and that was really cool because it's, like, this sort of combined thing where they're trying to, like, preserve and share their culture, and preserve the local wildlife and share information about the local wildlife and use this as a way of generating financial help that means that they won't have to rely on exploiting the wilderness. And it's a great time. They're really, it's like a lot of those places are a lot more genuine and like you have much more of a fun time because it's like a little bit less mediated and cheesy, if you know what I mean, than some of the other bigger tourist companies. But you need to look a little harder.
Right.
So I don't know. That's the end of my ramble. Is like, I would definitely encourage people to check out the Amazon. But I would definitely encourage people to do their homework a little bit and try to find a really awesome
mission.
Yeah.
So, people camping there in the Amazonia?
I didn't camp, but you can, and apparently it's amazing. It's a little more expensive.
I see.
Yeah. I wanted to tell you a little bit more about the Amazon River dolphin. Wow. I can't find the information that, like, I can't substantiate this, but it was said to me that the Amazon River dolphin jumps highest in their whole life once they find a mate. So it's just kind of beautiful, right? Like these two dolphins in love just leaping around.
Yeah.
I just wanted to share that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow. During the last song, we tried to chat in Spanish and Italian.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't speak Spanish.
And I don't speak Italian.
And you don't speak Italian. But it's nice that we can try to understand each other. Because I know Spanish people can understand Italian, like a good percent, or like probably 90%.
Mm-hmm.
And but for Italian people, it's completely different. Like, just few words I can understand, but let's try. Like, abbiamo gli ultimi 5 minuti di questo show.
Uh-huh.
In cui possiamo parlare italiano e spagnolo. Che cosa altro vuoi raccontare? Se hai qualcosa di speciale in spagnolo da raccontare, lingua spagnola.
Bueno, entonces eso es una de las historias de mi experiencia en la Amazonía, que es más, me parece un poquito interesante. Tengo una alergia super fuerte a pescadores y yo casi morí en la Amazonía, en la comunidad de Santo Domingo, porque yo no sabía en ese tiempo que mi alergia era tan fuerte. Entonces, es como una larga historia, pero yo comí por accidente un poquito de pescador y de pescador. Y yo casi morí, mi garganta casi cerré totalmente en la mitad de la Amazonía, sin nada, como sin ni hospitales ni nada.
Wow, that was scaring.
Yes, very scary.
Because you didn't know, right?
I didn't know at the time.
Non sapevi di questa allergia.
Uh-huh.
E, puoi ripetere, allergia a che cosa?
A pescado.
A pescado.
Sì.
What does mean pescado?
Fish.
A fish. Yeah. Okay.
How do you say it in Italian?
Pesci.
Okay. Got it.
So, quindi tu non puoi mangiare pesce?
No.
Anche qui? In Canada?
En Canadá, no como, ya no como pescado. Cuando era una niña, sí, podía comer pescado todo el día sin problema. Pero sabía que tenía una alergia, pero no sabía que era tan fuerte. Y tengo unas alergias a algunas cosas, pero cuando tienes tantas alergias, a veces tienes que hacer decisiones como, sí, eso es, vale la pena en este momento comer un poco de eso. Y pero yo no sabía que alergias puede desarrollar.
Yes. I know that allergy, io so che l'allergia può arrivare all'improvviso, ma può anche scomparire. It can disappear.
Yeah. Yeah.
By itself.
Allergies are crazy. They just do all sorts of things. Wow, it is so unreal that we can just talk and you can speak Italian and I can speak Spanish.
Sì, that's so weird. Stupendo.
Stupendo.
Dunque, adesso tu hai qualche altra musica, canzone che vuoi farci ascoltare o qualche canzone in particolare dall'Ecuador?
Però intentar. I can't really think of another song off the. Okay, wait. Yeah. I've got one. I've got one last Ecuadorian hit to take us off. This song played every 2 seconds. It was like the big pop hit when I was in town. Let's see if this is right. Yeah, this is it. So.
Como me gusta la noche.
Como me gusta la noche. This song was played everywhere. You couldn't escape it. And I guess this is how we'll take off the show this evening. So,
sí.
Educate yourself on the Amazon. Encourage Canadian mining companies and oil and gas companies to develop responsibly in other countries.
Yes. Claro, claro que sí.
Por supuesto.
Wild not.
Wild not!
Are you ready?
Como me gusta la noche, como me gusta la noche. Como me gusta la noche, la roncha y la cheta bailando en mi coche.
Como me gusta la noche, como me gusta la noche. Como me gusta la noche, la roncha y la cheta bailando en mi coche.
¡Arriba! los chetos y los cumbieros.
Another night's work well done. And so easy without that nuisance Spider-Man.
I didn't know you cared.
You!
Yes, Electro, and I'm going to short-circuit you once and for all.
You would have been better off in the hands of the police. You are no match for my power.
It takes more than power to win. It takes brains and knowing your enemy.
I'll pick my power against your brains any day. What was that?
That, my thieving fiend, is the result of brains.
Use your brain. Turn off all the lights when you leave a room. If every household in BC turned off one light bulb for 4 hours a day for 1 year, it would save enough electricity to power all the homes in Mission for an entire year. This Power Smart Play brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM.
Thanks to sky-high gas prices, we can convince America that more drilling is the answer. High gas prices? Drill.